the 2-2. Well hit down the left field line. Way back and goal!
After seven grueling games, there is finally a World Series champion. A lot of money was spent by a lot of people. A lot of tears have been shed, for better or for worse. But it all paid off for the world champion Chicago Cubs. We're going to bring in Will Leach. Will, trend or trash the managerial decisions in this World Series?
I have to say, if Joe Maddon is a lucky guy this morning, and I don't mean to say that he's entirely a lucky guy. Obviously, his players adore him, and I think it's funny. I feel like he was actually a better strategic manager in Tampa than necessarily he was in Chicago. There were some strange decisions that history will forget, and I think Cubs fans have already forgotten if they've forgotten them at all. But to me, it was one thing to we saw the result, really, in giving up a home run to Rajai Davis by Chapman. Clearly, he was not throwing as hard as he was in Game 6 and had thrown really his entire career. And I think when everyone was frustrated by Maddon pitching Chapman so much in Game 6, this is what they were worried about. But then to bring him back out for the ninth against the top of the order, to me, was a pretty staggering thing. And he got out of that. And amazingly, Chapman got out of it by throwing nothing but sliders. It was a very bizarre place to be in a world where Aroldis Chapman did not trust his fastball. That was a really weird thing to see. So, yeah, he got out of it and he escaped it. You know, I think the squeeze bunt play with Javier Baez, another strange one. But, you know, I feel like it kind of added to the whole kind of potpourri of weirdness that really was this final game. Like, there had to be, it was a game that had so much of everything that, of course, there had to be managerial decisions that made no sense, and I definitely did not understand and went against everything that we not only know about managing, but really think that we know about Joe Maddon. And, of course, they worked because this is just the kind of way that it, I don't even know if it worked. The Baez thing didn't work, but the Chapman coming out to the ninth, I understood the idea of bringing Chapman in, even though I wouldn't have kept him so long in Game 6. But to keep him out in the ninth is just, I really just could not believe that, particularly when you had Edwards, a guy that's great for them all series, and Montgomery, a guy who also even got the last out, never minding Strope and Rondon, who have been two great relievers for them all year. So it was certainly surprising, but, you know, somewhat, Joe Maddon has a ring and I don't, so what do I know?
That's how I felt the entire game, just shaking my head constantly. And yet, somehow, it worked. So we got weird baseball. We got extra innings. We got a rain delay. What, to you, as someone who's actually there, was the strangest thing that you saw at this Game 7?
You know, that Davis homer, like, I know it's going to get lost a little bit just because the Cubs won. Mm-hmm. But Rajai Davis does not hit homers. Like, that is not his thing at all. And it was a terrific at-bat. But it still felt like, that'd be different if there were, like, Napoli up there or Lindor up there or even Santana up there. They're like, okay, this guy's got power. And Davis, you're hoping maybe he can get a hit to extend the inning. But the idea that he hit that ball, I was sitting next to Phil Rogers, who works with us at MLB.com, and a nice man who I'd only met earlier that day, and we really shared very few words at all. And when Davis hit that ball, I tackled him. I'm not going to lie to you. I jumped up and started screaming. And I'm new to press boxes. I'm not always as great about the decors as press is supposed to be. But I lost my mind. I couldn't believe that happened. That was one of the most amazing things I'd ever seen. And so for me, as I kind of wrote in my Sports on Earth piece, you know, Cubs fans, they've been wanting this for so long. And once they got four outs away, you wonder, wow, so this is how it's going to go down, huh? They're going to kind of, it's going to be kind of easy. They came back from 3-1, and they're not going to sweat this too much. It was funny. There was a funny interview with Theo Epstein where he cursed, actually, on the local station, talking about how people that were texting him saying, congratulations. And he said, in a more amusing, if more less friendly, family-friendly term that I'm using, stop texting me that we've already won, because I've been through this before, and I know how this works. And clearly, you know, but I think that a lot of longtime Cubs fans, you know, I think it was surprising to them. Like, well, we're really just going to win this easily. There has to be, I guess we are. I guess that's what this team has been all year. They've been the dominant team. They've been this terrific team. I guess that's how it's going to work. So to have that old fear, like, imagine, just imagine if the Indians win this game. Like everything that we've always, forget the idea of curses. Like, you would not want to be near Wrigley Field in case whatever it is there is contagious. I mean, it is. It was just imagine if they lost that game. They're four outs away. They're a team that's waited 108 years for a World Series. They have this great team that's been dominant all year, and then they blow it with four outs left. It would have been even more incredible than really what we saw. And to me, that I thought that was ultimately, as I wrote my piece, the perfect way for the Cubs to end the curse, because they got one last flash of the old pain and one last flash of the 108 years in the wilderness and one last flash of, oh my gosh, are we actually cursed? And then for them to overcome that after a rain delay, it was flabbergasting. It was, I'm a Cardinals fan, and so which is probably a whole other conversation considering what happened last night. But so I, 2011 Game 6, I was not there. My wife is 8 months pregnant. I was superstitious about leaving, so I didn't go to that game. But I still feel like that's the best game I've ever watched on television. That game was just lunatic, and there was two. If the Indians would have come back in the bottom of the 10th mm-hmm. and then gone to the 11th, then maybe that game is a tie with this one. But for games in person and to see the swing, and also, listen, there was this idea that there were all these Cubs fans there and there were more Cubs fans than Indian fans. There were not more Cubs fans than Indian fans. There were that place was still at, but it was still like 70% Indian fans, which means there's 30% Cubs fans. So it was a loud back and forth. It had the feel of one of those like old college basketball games where half the crowd is on one side and half the crowd is the other. It was just, there was just constant noise throughout, and it was just a staggering thing to be a part of. The game itself would have been amazing if it were between the Rays and the Mariners in mid-August. The fact that it would happen in Game 7 of the World Series with those two teams, it just kind of blows your mind.
That's an amazing way to put it, because it really does just seem like a really intelligent showrunner was just like, oh, well, these are the narrative threads we need to tie up, you know, from all from the past 108 seasons of Cubs baseball. But
and we will end the drought with literal rain. Like, that's actually what will do it. It's one of those times where you're up there and because like a lot of people, I write a little bit of my story as the game's going on. I make little notes for myself, and I kind of keep what'll be going on. And I have to say, after Davis's homer, I put my computer down. I was like, nope, we're not going to do anything until this game is over. And it's one of those games where you really want to just do it justice, you know. And there's been so much wonderful writing on about the game all across the internet, both on MLB.com and all over on ESPN and Jonah Carey, and just so many terrific pieces about that game. And I find myself, even though I am a Cardinals fan, it is emotionally damaging for me to live in a world now where the Cubs have won the World Series. I'm a little afraid the Earth is going to careen off its axis and crash into the sun now. So it's a little painful for me to read all these things. But it was the type of game that I feel like I could read about all day and all year and not get sick of. And you know what? I think I'm going to have the opportunity.
I think you will too. And I think people should check out your piece, obviously, on sportsonearth.com. One question for you before you have to run off. So we were talking about the Rajai Davis homer and how J.R. Smith, who was also there, took off his shirt and people were like, oh, it's going to start an Indians rally. And then it did. Do you think that LeBron's decor at his Halloween party, the 3-1 lead tombstone and et cetera, I'm making fun of their words, do you think he cursed the Indians?
I think that the Indians are enough of a curse on their own. Like, remember, they are now the franchise in baseball that's gone the longest without the World Series title. I do a thing after every major sports season, NBA, NFL, and Major League Baseball. I don't know the NHL. We'll have to do it. My colleague Joe D'Alessio does that. And at the end of the season, I do a tortured fan base rankings where I rank the fan bases of every team. Kind of blew me away this year that this was my number one and two rankings teams played each other in the World Series. So Cleveland is obviously going to take over that number one spot that Chicago had last year. This is a franchise, again, under any other context, against any other team, all we would have been talking about over the last month would have been, can the Indians do it? Can Cleveland do it? Can they break? Can they actually win this World Series? It's just their misfortune that they were playing the Cubs. I guess kind of the only team that people would be more into breaking a curse than them. I suppose that makes a certain kind of justice and really kind of adds to the incredible nature of this whole story in the first place. To me, you know, I still feel like, and I kind of missed this in my piece, we've talked lots of, there's been lots of talk this week about baseball you know, having this kind of great moment in the sun and really kind of this exuberant team, and the rings have been amazing. To me, I can't think of a better way to sell the game of baseball than Chris Bryant, the MVP, one of the most exciting young players in the game, literally fielding the World Series ground ball last out, smiling from the minute he sees the ball until he throws the ball and catches it. Just this big grin, understanding what's happening. It's just that joy there. I mean, it's enough to warm even a Cardinals fan's heart, just a little bit anyway.
That is definitely something that you should get on a T-shirt and be forced to wear, because now you've admitted that you liked this Cubs victory in front of other Cardinals fans. So.
Oh, I'm sorry. Wait. Oh, you wanted to talk to Will Leach? That's somebody. I'm sorry. I'm just some buddy of his. I filled in. He had nothing to do with that statement. He's not the guy that said that. What are you talking about?
Oh, Cardinals Nation knows now. All right. Last question before we get you off the phone. So now that your number one most tortured fan base has won, what's next? Will they come back next year? How long is it going to take for the Indians to maybe see their own World Series title?
Yeah, I think that's the thing that I think gets lost a little bit in this, and why it would have been so scary if the Cubs would have lost that game. It's kind of a rarity this year. The team with the best record in baseball won the World Series. That so rarely happens. The playoff postseason, baseball postseason is so random and so strange, and so it's just hard. It's just really difficult, even if you are a great team, to win. So to have that, to get that far, I mean, it's not going to be easy for them to come back next year. The Cubs, I think, are going to be the best team in baseball next year, and Cleveland's going to be the best team in the AL Central. But it's the baseball postseason. That means nothing. Mm-hmm. Right? All sorts of crazy things that will happen. My 2006 Cardinals were maybe in the top bottom five of baseball teams. And never mind just postseason teams. All teams in baseball going into that postseason. And they got hot at the right time and won the World Series. So
I can't talk about 2006. I'm from Detroit. That just made me really sad.
I know. I'm sorry. But I think that's kind of the idea. What the Cubs did belied the randomness of the postseason, and I think you never know when these opportunities are going to come up again, so I think that's even more impressive. I think the Cubs are the best team in baseball next year, and will be for the next few years, but that and the connection of them actually making it to the postseason gauntlet of the World Series, that's hardly it's hardly a one-to-one ratio.
We're so lucky that we got to have this postseason, and we're so lucky that you came to talk to us about it. So thank you so much for chatting. I know you have to jet, maybe literally.
Well, it is my pleasure, and honestly, it was definitely one of those games. You just felt really lucky to be there. And I apologize now if he's listening. I apologize for Phil Rogers for tackling you. It's screaming things at the top of my lungs. Some things that I can't repeat on a family podcast. One of the things that's really fun for me to write about sports. So I've been writing about sports for a while. It's still just as much fun for me as it always is. You see some lot of old time reporters being like, "This is my 33rd World Series. It just doesn't get you excited anymore." And I'm like, "Well, then maybe you shouldn't cover this anymore." Because for me, it just blew me away. I couldn't believe how much you just felt lucky to be there, even though this Cardinal fan had to go to sleep at 3:30 in the morning in his hotel room with very loud drunken Cubs fans screaming all night in the next room. So I suppose after years of mocking the Cubs as a Cardinals fan, I suppose it is my just desserts.
Will, thank you for your time. You were at Cavs games, you were at Indians games, Cubs games. You were literally all over the map.
Yeah.
So thank you for your time. We're going
to
stick.
I want to be able to do that.
I know, right? It's one day.
Yes.
One day. Yeah. We could all be like,
when we get
Will
to walk it off private jet.
Yeah. Tomorrow.
We're going to stay with baseball. So the trend of using relievers in the postseason is always really interesting. The decisions of the managers, as Will mentioned, is really interesting. But do you think that this trend will continue into the 2017 regular season and managers using their relievers earlier in games in maybe high leverage situations that aren't just in the ninth inning?
I don't think we'll see it as much in the regular season, just because you don't want to make them work too much. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't want to be using, you certainly will not have Andrew Miller pitch three innings every single day.
Yeah.
That's just not feasible. You just can't do that.
Yeah.
So I think maybe in a pinch, maybe when we get closer to the postseason, and certainly in the postseason, I think we'll see that a little bit more, and managers is getting more comfortable with using relievers in strange roles, even throwing starters that are not really working out. I mean, that's been going on.
Yeah.
Throwing starters that are kind of like, maybe not necessarily a fifth starter, throwing him in the pen for long relief or maybe three innings.
I really like that.
Every other day, stuff like that. I think we'll see more of that. But I think in the beginning, we'll probably be back to normal.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it just doesn't make sense also to have a guy come in April. You know, you're not going to have Andrew Miller try to, like, get eight outs then. That's not something that would make sense to that anyone
shut it
to
off.
Do. You know, right? It's those must-win situations, I think, really change the way you're going to use a bullpen. Also, when you're aware that you only have, like, 3, 4, 2, 1 games left to play, that's going to change the way you're going to manage your bullpen, as opposed to being like, oh, well, we have 97 more games to play.
Exactly.
So, I think that we will probably see some of this bullpen stuff stick around, but it won't start appearing until there are, you know, until late September, and then it'll continue.
And it makes me sad. I completely agree. I'm going to trash the idea that managers will use their relievers in high leverage situations in April, like they're using them in the postseason. But there's something really special about seeing them used that way, and seeing, knowing Andrew Miller's coming out and he could go for however long, and he's like, put me in wherever you need me.
Yeah.
I think that's really special. Maybe they take away that fifth starter and maybe he was a true starter and that guy becomes a more high leverage 6th, 7th, 8th inning guy. I don't know. I don't know.
Shorten your rotation to 4?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm kind of into the idea of just like a long reliever.
I think that's fun.
Like a dedicated long reliever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens.
Fun idea. Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to move on to the NCAA, and we're talking about pro basketball, but also college basketball. Ben Simmons had some interesting comments about the way he was treated while he was at LSU, and so I think it's really interesting. He said, well, he wants to say it now because he wants to make change, but why wasn't he saying something when someone offered him a Bentley, supposedly, in college, or, you know, trying to make things better? Why not make them better while you're there? Why did you wait until you left to try to make that change? Gemma, what do you think?
Well, I think it's important to talk about this issue, so we should trend it.
Okay.
But I, you know, like, I kind of understand why you might feel unsafe giving voice to these ideas when you're still kind of in the system in that way, you know, because what in your life do you have to lose? Like, what, like, you have to, you know, I think ultimately the greater good thing is trying to expose these things and not necessarily the timing of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to trend for the same reason that we should be talking about this and not acting like it's not happening. I think it could be that, and that makes perfect sense. It could also be that he is maturing a little bit more now and is realizing that, okay, in the moment, like, you're getting these gifts and these things and this attention and this and that, whatever, and it's like, I'm the man. This is amazing.
Yeah. Oh,
this
is
the best I've ever been in my entire life, you know? So, and you're a kid, like, of course you're gonna love all that stuff.
Yeah.
And he's still a kid. Like,
yeah.
He's not
still
like
a kid. Yes.
Like 45 years old or anything
right.
like that. But he is probably wising up. And maybe it feels like now that people are getting more vocal, now that athletes are getting more vocal about things, that he has something to stand up for and as a platform. So,
yeah.
I like it.
I don't know if it would have hurt where he was drafted, but, you know, the school's making millions off his likeness, his face, his jerseys, his signatures, everything. So I do wish that he would have said something. If you know you're a one and done, if you know you're going to school for 1 year, and that's just so you can get drafted.
You get a little bit more freedom in that.
Yeah, you do, especially when you know you're good. You have the ability to stand up and say, wait a second, this is not right. I feel like it doesn't make as big of a difference once they're gone.
Yeah.
He's gone. They're done. Like, he could still be LSU's problem if he was offered benefits in that way. But, I mean, I feel like he could have said something earlier. So I would like to see athletes step up, but I can understand that it could be dangerous for them to do that.
Yeah, in a fragile situation.
So. Yeah. Okay, so moving to the NFL. So players are retiring earlier. Obviously, so not only are the NFL's ratings down, and Major League Baseball beat out Sunday Night Football for Game 5 of the World Series, which hasn't been done, in a really long time.
Yeah.
Let's see, 23.6 million viewers for the baseball game and 18 million for Sunday Night Football.
That's humongous.
It's huge.
That's
humongous. Right? Take a second and enjoy that.
Yeah.
But the product on the field is not good. Guys are getting hurt. They're finally realizing, hey, this is actually really dangerous. But in the same sense, is that good for the sport that guys are retiring younger and you're taking the product off the field? Can they not find a balance and get them help or change the protocol of how you hit a guy to make it even stronger on the field? I know they've done things before, but so trend or trash, guys like Marshawn Lynch retiring at a way younger age than they used to.
I'm going to trend this. I think that, and I remember reading an argument about this not too long ago, that the NFL is just too old right now. And there's too many kids killing themselves trying to get in here.
Yes.
And also too many guys hanging on for their dear lives killing themselves doing the same thing.
Both,
so, yeah, I think it is very beneficial to football that they're going to be able to stay younger because people are leaving. Although it's a little scary that people are like, you know what, this has been my entire life, but mm-hmm. I'm actually going to call it quits.
Yeah.
Because also the money situation is kind of scary too. Your contracts are not guaranteed.
Yeah. You may not balance your money well. They have trouble with that.
But that's another thing that I think is positive, because maybe these people are learning, one, that they can have a career outside of this and support their families and whatever, this and that. And maybe they are managing their money better, which is fantastic, because that's one of the biggest problems with athletes.
Yeah.
So I think there's a positive in that as well. When you have people like Richard Sherman, who are superstars in this game, talking against, and Cam Newton talking against what's going on, that they're getting injured and somebody needs to step up, commissioner's not stepping up, all these people are supposed to protect them are not stepping up.
Yeah.
That's a little scary for the NFL. So they really do need to step it up. They need to step it up a million years ago. Do I think they're going to step it up? No chance. Absolutely no chance. But they need to make an effort if they want to get those ratings up and deliver a better product.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we should definitely trend this, because there are a lot of things that come out of this idea of players retiring younger and younger, which is any sport benefits from youth on the roster. And our sport, baseball, like any single sport, people are more excited by young players.
Except for David Ross. I think he's the exception.
Well, right. Well, but like there's always, you know, it's nice to have a veteran on a team, right? But you don't want a team that's all 45-year-old guys. David Ross is not 45, but you understand what I'm saying. Yeah. So I think good for any sport in that sense. But I also think for the NFL, there's this extra layer, which is that why are these guys retiring so young? And do I think it's good for these players? Yes.
Yeah.
I do think it is good for specifically the players to be out of this arrangement that is probably really damaging to them in a lot of ways.
Right.
I don't, though, think it's good PR for the NFL. And I also think that it probably reflects poorly on the way that they're treating these guys.
Because, yeah.
You know, it's Calvin Johnson isn't, you know, that old.
Right.
So, and I think it also is a loss to see these big players who are brands for them, basically, leave the sport.
Right. Yeah.
Do I think that overall means that football is dying? It's really hard to see, because people have been saying baseball is dying for so long, and it's clearly not. So it's really hard to, like, separate all the different reasons that people aren't watching football games right now.
Yeah.
From, like, a historic World Series for both teams, from insane election coverage that's making everyone anxious and watch CNN instead, you know, whatever.
Right.
There's like a lot of other stuff going on.
Yeah.
But I do think that we should look at the younger players retiring as some kind of flag for what it is
that
is making them step away from the game.
That's a great way of putting it. It is a huge red flag. I don't like seeing them retire young. I want to see them have a great long career. I want to see them be safe and have a healthy long career and have a future with their families. And I want to see them manage their money and be able to you know.
But like if I have to pick for someone's future, which like I don't get to decide your future, whatever. But like if it's between you having a really long career and you having a healthy, safe life, like I pick your healthy, safe life. Get out.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. I think it just sucks that that's what the game has come to. And it's definitely a huge red flag. And obviously Cam Newton trying to talk to Roger Goodell in the NFL about the hits that he's been taking.
Yeah.
And there was like a really great story online talking about Tom Brady taking the same hits and getting the flags called. Peyton Manning, you know, guys like that. And he's not getting the calls because he's big and it looks like he can take it.
And he's young.
And he's young, yeah.
He's not fully established himself, according to like Ed Hockley and stuff.
Right.
Actually 40 years old.
Right,
exactly. Yeah.
He's fine. He was only the MVP, you know, at whatever age
and
he was.
Every child's dream.
Yes.
Everyone wants to be
handing out footballs to the precious young children there. But yeah, so hopefully, I don't know, maybe the trend will continue and then football will be forced to make a huge change. We're going to take another curve. We're going to head over to the NBA. We're covering all the major sports today.
Nice.
Russell Westbrook is basically like, who's Kevin Durant? I don't need Kevin Durant. The guy's pulling a triple-double in the first couple of games of the season. It's unbelievable. The Warriors are obviously, they had a rough start at home, but they're fine. They're doing okay.
Yeah.
The guys are grooving.
They win every game. That's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's not going to win every game.
Okay. It's funny that you're saying it like that as though no one thought that could be a possibility last year when everyone's like, oh, we're going to win every game.
No, I know. I didn't want to win every game.
Nobody.
I never wanted. I never asked for this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't. But want to win the big game.
Trend or trash, Russell Westbrook dominating without his partner in crime. But can it last? Is it for real? Is it legit, Ashley?
I don't know. I'm going to trend this, absolutely, okay. Because one, that's another storyline that people can focus on instead of the Warriors. And they're winning or losing.
Trying to,
I'm sick
trying
of
to
it.
Take the bad press.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Like,
I got
just get the focus off of this because that's I don't want that. But no, I want Russell Westbrook to do well. I think it's funny that everyone like discounted him.
Yeah.
And that's another reason
they
why.
They did. They literally said, oh, like, no KD chance. Left. You have no chance.
Exactly. And he was like, oh, check that. Look at this.
Yes.
I'm going to murder this game. And it's amazing and so much fun to watch. Do I think he can maintain this, 38.7 points per game? Something crazy like that? No.
No.
I mean, if he does, fantastic. That's so great. I love that. But I think he will cool down, but I think he's still going to be the superstar and the lone superstar of this team. Instead of sharing the spotlight and maybe being held down. I mean, nothing against Kevin Durant. I think he's a wonderful player.
Yeah.
I think he needed Russell Westbrook. Westbrook needed him to, like, kind of chill out
because
that guy can go nuts at any second.
Right.
So maybe he's learned a couple things there, and now he's free. The chains are off, and he can do whatever he wants, and no one's here to tell him what to do. And I like that.
It's like a
so
candy
it's exciting.
Store.
Yeah, it's like a kid going to college. Like,
yeah.
No parents, whatever. So Party. I'm so excited to watch him play now. It's great.
Yeah, I mean, I trend this too because I just love Russ. He's great. He delights me, as always. And I also like that when there was this big deal and everyone was, like, upset about the KD signing, there was this tiny, tiny voice that was there and all of the stories covering it. We're like, but what if this is, like, a really good thing?
Yeah.
Yes.
And I want it to be. I'm very excited for them to play each other,
which
is coming up soon.
Yes.
We're recording this on Wednesday. So.
Yes.
It will have happened by the time you listen to this, actually. But I'm looking forward to it, and I hope that he goes nuts and scores 50 points again.
I do not. I absolutely do not.
I really want to see that.
We're going to trend Russ, maybe not trend 100 points on the Warriors.
Well, not. I will storm this studio.
Storm the studio.
If we decide to trend that. No chance. No, I'm kidding.
Okay, we are switching gears. Again, we're covering it all. College football now. Texas at Texas Tech on Saturday, and you know, when you're surrounded by reporters with recorders in your face, sometimes you say stupid things. And a defensive lineman for Texas said something really stupid. He said, I want to injure your quarterback, talking about Texas Tech's Patrick Mahomes. So, you know, he came back and apologized, and he said, I chose my words poorly. I should have done better. I'm just talking about being the best player that I can be. But he still said it. Those words came out, and it's a PR nightmare, basically. But trend or trash, is that, like, just the college attitude now? Like, I've got to kill the quarterback, or I won't get drafted to play pro football and make money and get hurt and end my career quickly? Like, you know, like, is that just what we've come to now, saying these statements? Gemma, what do you think?
I feel like this is something that should also trend because, again, I think it is a flag that is waving in the air for us to see and to look at.
Yeah.
Obviously, this kid isn't going to say that because no one ever told him to.
Yeah,
right.
You know, he's a kid, relatively, and he learns these. He's learned this kind of attitude from all these years of playing the sport. And that's something that he has, even if no one's ever said directly to him, like, which has also we've seen happen in football, saying directly to players, you will get a bonus if you hurt someone.
Right.
You know, even if no one ever said that directly to him, there's definitely reinforcement.
Saints.
You know, that comes from that kind of behavior. So I don't think we should be surprised that he said something like this and act like it's all shocking that anyone would have this opinion, because obviously that's the foundation of the sport. So if someone thinks that, it's because he's been taught to think it. And we need to examine, you know, that level of how we're trying to reinforce kids playing the sport as,
good point.
You know,
sure.
If kids are going to continue playing it, which is its whole separate thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm going to kind of go on the other side of that.
Okay.
If there is a possible other side.
Let's hear it.
It's a little bit. So my problem is with this kid, he's just said a stupid thing.
Yeah.
And he's not able to hold his tongue, because that happens in locker rooms all the time. That is the lingo to get you pumped up. Do you really plan on injuring the person? Well, it depends on what kind of person you are and how already far gone you are. Like, I mean, some of these kids have already developed terrible signs. So, you know, maybe this is his situation right now, but I think that the real crime here is that he didn't keep his mouth shut. You're supposed to keep your mouth shut. Mm-hmm. That stays in the locker room, and you should not be letting those things out. And that's why we're hearing this when we have never truly heard it before. You know, like, we don't often hear kids slip up like that, because they're disciplined enough to keep the lips zipped.
I'm glad he said something, though, because that...
I know you are,
yes. Yeah, that, yeah, you know, yeah. You want to see that that's how people are thinking and speaking, because that's not necessarily healthy
they
and good.
Are. It's just kind of like an unspoken lingo that you have. Like, you're going to kill this person. And even I scream it when I'm watching a game. When I see someone blitzing the quarterback, and I'm like, kill him.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, I don't want him to die or get hurt.
Of course.
But I'm screaming, kill him. Yeah. Like, it's just like how... These crazy.
Well, that's how you're supposed to watch the game.
That's how you get pumped up,
right.
And it's fun. It's a lot of fun.
Right.
Am I worried about these kids going into the NFL? Of course, because we've already talked about this. Safety is getting worse and worse right now, and things are getting a little too intense with all the pills and the safer helmets and uniforms that are really murdering them. But I think that the real crime here was that he opened his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't like it.
It's interesting because they're definitely taught, they definitely have training. Do not say this. Do not say this. Like, this is how you say this. This is how you address this. But this wasn't like a very political, this couldn't have been a political question. Like, how will you, you know, hold down Patrick Mahomes? Like, how will you prevent him from, you know, passing or running on your team? And the kid said that.
Yeah.
Of all the things.
Thing
of
say.
All the things that you could say. And he chose those
he
words.
He said something extremely unfiltered.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, to me, a sign of the kind of thing that everyone is saying all the time, always, and saying it's like, oh, it's not realistic, doesn't make sense in the sport when it has happened, when
right.
like professional
sure,
football
happen.
Players
yes.
intentionally injured other players,
right.
and not in a metaphorical sense or even in a sense it's like, oh, well, there's a certain degree of physical altercation that comes with playing the mm-hmm. sport. Like, no, there was a professional football team that got bonuses and money to harm other players. And so when we see a slip of that come through, like, you can say it's metaphor and you can say that, like, it's just something that helps you get pumped up, but that language is clearly shaping the way that people really get hurt.
Yeah, but yes, we've had two accounts now. There's another NFL team that also was rumored that they have said
yeah.
stuff like this. But how many NFL teams have we watched through so many years, and how many college teams are out there? Are people finding out about them getting money? I mean, and how many people are actually legitimately injuring people? You know,
right.
like people
well, we don't
get
know.
Injured.
But we don't know.
Exactly.
Because
so
you're not supposed
I think
to talk about
small,
it.
I think it's a small amount that actually is giving bonuses and stuff like that.
Well, right. I'm sure. Maybe it's not like a league-wide, country-wide
I don't think it is.
Situation.
Yeah, I don't think it is.
But I do think that just because when it has happened, so to write it off and say, like, that's just how people talk is just not something that you can really, I think, fully say, because obviously it has, like, people really do get seriously injured. You know?
No, I know. Yeah, people do get injured.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate. No one wants anyone to get injured.
And intentionally injured.
Right. Well,
that's where the hook is for me.
Yeah, because the obviously actions are speaking louder than words, and we'll see what happens on Saturday when they play each other, and who will be watching him, and who, you know, how Tech's offensive line will step up, especially against that guy when they see him. But
you know they're pumped.
Yeah, they're going to be pumped. That is going to be a crazy game.
Yeah.
Yes, again, these things do feed into future. And
I also think if you're really young, it's hard to know the line. Like, adults, you can say, oh, this is like a bad mm-hmm. thing that you did, and you did it intentionally. You made a bad decision, and you intentionally made
yeah.
that bad decision. Whereas kids, like, they just want to please.
Well, he may have gotten a high five for saying something about the quarterback earlier in the day, and he got
he got
exactly. positive praise for being so amped up about it, and it carried over. And again, not an excuse, and not saying that what he said was okay or that how it translated on the field is okay, but, like, man, these kids. Man, these kids. Hopefully somebody had a really good talking to him. Hopefully Charlie Strong sat him down and said, listen, this is completely unacceptable.
You little idiot.
Yeah.
Listen, you little twerp.
Say that. Yes.
Yeah.
All right, this is it for us. The baseball season is officially over.
Sad.
We are in the off season, so we have a lot. We have a lot of other things that apparently we'll be talking about. So get excited for that.
MLS?
MLS.
We'll never
NBA.
Talk.
We will talk about the MLS. We will talk about it all. We will cover it, Gemma. Don't you worry. For Gemma Konecko and Ashley Chavez, I'm Danny Wexelman. We'll talk to you next time.
Now the 2-2. Well hit down the left field line.